Forge the Narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge Narrative. My name is Paul Murphy, your host. This is a very special episode. We're going to be talking about Chapter Approved. I'm joined tonight by Chris Morgan.
Definitely not Chapter Disapproved.
Mr. Mike Brandt.
Evening, everybody.
And 40K Sweetheart, Thomas Reedy.
Go boy, as I've done by everyone else, if everyone reads my nonsense.
It's not just 40K Sweetheart. We love them too.
Absolutely.
Everyone has a good time when they play me. I don't give bad games. Except for Paul Murphy. He gets mad at me.
I could tell them some stories about the games. Of course, we've had some flip-flops.
Back and forth.
I don't want to get too deep into that. We'll talk about that later on. But Chapter Approved is massive. So by the time you're hearing this, it's up for pre-order on the Games Workshop site. You're going to want it. I'm not telling you anything you're not going to do already. Go pre-order it as soon as you can. It is chock full of good information. It is going to be absolutely impossible to cover in one show. For instance, let me tell you some of the highlights. The 8, a completely new formation for the Tau. Sisters of Battle beta codex. This is something that they promised us, which is unheard of. You're going to get a sneak peek at what the studio's thinking and probably some ability to influence it along the way before it actually becomes a full-fledged codex. Point changes for almost every unit in the game. The actual codifications of match play rules. There's new terrain rules updates if you play with that. Vehicle design rules for open play. Character design rules for open play. Primaris Marines get Power Fist.
All right. The Intercessor, yeah.
There's new rules in here for demons, for flesh hounds and fiends, and I mean data slates, full on data slates. This book has got a lot. This is going to shake up the game a lot, primarily based on the point changes, I guess. Some of the other stuff I'm talking about is either for open or narrative play, but it's crammed full of stuff. What else can I say?
If you play competitive 40K, I mean, really, if you're going to play 40K in general, you should be picking up this book. There's no reason not to, at the very least. I mean,
because you want to put Power Fist on your intercessors. That's what's up.
Oh, that's all we need. I mean,
I want everybody buys the whole book just to get Power Fist on their intercessors.
That should be the name of the book, just Power Fist on Intercessors, $35.
it really is kind of a cool change in that, having gone through some of the Mournival side, playtest side of both Chapter Approves that we've had now, the methodology is completely different. Whereas the first one was very much, in my opinion, reactive and, you know, like a first stab at doing a Chapter Approved, you know, the General's Handbook style release for 40K. This one is very much, it's hit its stride and it's awesome. The methodology for how we went about designing it and building it and affecting it is different, and it's much more robust than even the first one was. So it's pretty exciting to see, you know, how it impacts everything and what LVO and everything else looks like as a result of it.
When you think about it, like the last Chapter Approved, half the armies were still indexes. Now we've got, you know, the beta codex, of course, for Sisters, and then Gene Stealer Cult. And that's it. Like, everything else is out. And there's been a lot of time to collect data about all these factions.
In addition to just codex and index clarifications, there's also a huge section dedicated to the Forge World units. And we have seen some changes to the points on that stuff, like the Forge World Necron stuff. The Pylon went down in points.
There's a lot of weird, random Forge World stuff. Some of it, it's either so overcosted or just... I think
that they made a pretty good distinction between what the Games Workshop wanted to see in regular games and what they wanted to see in larger apocalypse style games. And I think that's you send a message with some of these points that, like, hey, this is what you should be doing with that stuff. But some of that stuff on the line, or some stuff that's just an army's answer, like the Pylon is kind of like an answer to knights or to the giant flyers or that for the Necrons. I think that this was a nice little nod to that army, in addition to the changes they got with their codex stuff.
So basically, you're saying you must construct additional pylons.
at least want one, I think, if you're playing Necrons. We'll talk about them now since I'm talking about them. But the Tesseract Vault went up in points, but I believe everything else saw a little bit of a decline. The Annihilation Barge is now at 100 points. The Triarch Stalker, this is without war gear, is now at 85 points. That's a huge decrease in points.
The decreases for Necrons across the board were substantial, and it was a long discussion when we were talking about what to do with them. You make the good point that one unit went up, but it would be difficult to overstate how much the codex as a whole went down in overall cost.
Well, every time we looked at it, every time I tried to like go through it, it needs a 10-15% drop across the board because it just felt overcost. You just did not have the presence on the table table. And since it's not a army that can ally with other things to try to find a cheaper presence on the table, it always felt that, you know, you play your game, you'd have every round, you would watch as you diminished way too much because you just didn't have enough on the table.
For all the point decreases in the Necrons, I believe they should pump every single point that they saved into more Immortals. The Immortals have remained the same. I don't think they've got a change, but the Necron Warrior did drop a point. I think they're at 11 points now. I think that they were at 12 before.
There's a huge discussion behind that. I actually don't think I can talk about, but suffice to say that any Necron unit that did not go down in points, it seems like it's too much. It was not overlooked. It was a long discussion. There was a lot of back and forth, and so we did everything we could to help them because they're in such a questionable state in the pre-chapter approved meta.
They're just in a weird... It's just very odd, and I don't know. Like, it's hard to justify because it's like we know. Like, it feels the destroyers felt right. Like, they felt about where they should. Maybe could be cheaper, but I mean, that's what you saw a lot of times.
The wraiths went down a bit too. So the wraiths are a tanky unit, and they're an answer. They're things that can, you know, draw out some of the screens, maybe get around, tie some things up, and you know, with their points they were before, you find yourself kind of on the fence. I think they draw about 6 points a piece or whatever. Again, these are all points that I believe you should salvage and put into more Immortals. Like, for instance, if you are now lured to take a Triarch Stalker, which I'm not recommending, by the way.
I was going to say, it still might not be there.
But. Right. But if you are going to take that Triarch Stalker with the ability to, it doesn't twin link your weapons anymore, but you can reroll once, you want to have something that you can actually throw down range that matters for. And I think that a Tesla Shots is probably a good thing to pair up with that. It's same, you know, similar range bands and lots of rate of fire.
Yeah. And I mean, for those who haven't seen it yet, which is many at this point when you're listening to this for the first time, I mean, there are units that drop 60, 70 points in the Codex for Necron. So we certainly were paying attention, at least when we did this particular
The Annihilation one. Barge, what's the thing that the Catacomb Command Barge also took a bit of a point reduction?
Yep. Yeah, because that's, you know, pre-chapter approved, that's 138. So
for what, the Annihilation Barge?
Yeah, for the Catacomb Command Barge.
Oh, Catacomb Command. It's 124 now. So that's, you're basically picking up a free Immortal just from that.
Well, and there may have been changes to it, the cost of its actual war gear as well.
Good point.
When we first did Chapter Approved in 2017, it was very much focused on what are the most egregious units that need correction. And I feel like percentage-wise, there were also a larger number of points increases at that time. And it was done without a whole lot of information. I can't go into detail about, you know, what GW's production schedules are, but suffice to say, we don't write Chapter Approved a week before the codec, you know, the book drops. So you can only take into account but so much, and there's a future state that you don't know about when you're working on it. But when we went through Chapter Approved for 2018, the book you guys are all pre-ordering, I guess today, we literally reviewed and discussed at least every single unit and every single piece of war gear in the game. And so as a result, there's percentage-wise a far fewer number of nerfs and a dramatic number of buffs where units that were not seeing the table at all because they cost too much or they just weren't nearly as efficient, and war gear that wasn't taken, not because you didn't want to take it, but because it just cost too much, whether that's combi weapons or, you know,
Draco.
Yes, I think Draco, he counts war as just gear. A weapon.
It's just a weapon. Yeah. The changes are huge. It's a meta shifting event, but not in a bad way, because instead of saying your army isn't good anymore, it has much more said far more units and armies are now good that were not. So it's cool because it's one of those rare cases where instead of shifting the meta to make you buy stuff or whatever, the game has simply opened up the meta, and there's a far larger number of things that you have sitting on your shelf that you can grab and put down on the table again because you can afford to.
Yeah, I think tools in the toolbox. I think people would choose to have more tools in the toolbox if given a choice between one super powerful thing and several things that work at the same time or in different combinations.
And you look at missions too. I mean, the tournament missions, which is, you know, kind of what we play a lot, are focused around, you know, killing things or scoring things or whatever. And if you just don't have the toys that you can put on the table to do that, then that automatically disqualifies an army no matter how cool it looks for a lot of people. So, Richard, talking about opening up those doors and making more things, at least an option question to inject into the discussion, which I think this is done. And we can go ahead and jump to Grey Knights next. I mean, kind of joking about Drago being a weapon, although I think that's a pretty accurate description. The Grey Knights promised on the community page, you know, got some pretty sweeping changes to their points. And it looks like every unit in the Codex has had some type of point change to it. For instance, Caldor Drago is now 180 points. I don't know if someone can bring up what he
That's
what
a 60-point decrease for Caldor.
Yeah, it was 250,
240. I think it was 260.
Or, it was 240.
Yeah, it's 240. Drops we can math, folks. We can math over here.
No, we'll get there.
That's a huge drop. I mean, that's what, yeah, three Grey Knights? Three more Grey Knights?
He literally dropped 25% of his points, went away.
There's no rules changes either. This is, he is what it is, and with this points now.
I hate to say rumor busted, but I don't think Grey Knight Terminators changed at all in terms of base cost, right?
Well, Terminator Squad, regular old Grey Knight Terminator Squad, are 39 points apiece.
It did.
39 points.
2 points down.
Nemesis Dread Knight, Grandmaster Nemesis Dread Knight, 170 points.
Mm-hmm. It was what? Two?
It was 190, but their weapons also went down. So again, yeah, he was, I kind of hinted at, we literally reviewed every weapon in the game. And so there are sweeping points changes to many weapons across both common weapons and specific weapons to Codex across every single Codex. I think there are no armies other than ones that are like new Codexes right now that did not have substantial changes to both units and the war gear that those units equip.
Yeah, what you're not going to find in here is a lot of orc changes and a lot of, and there's no Gene Stealer cult changes.
Yeah.
And that would be rather superfluous.
Well, I say that there are some changes, but it's not a large block. You're not going to see big sweeping changes.
Yeah. And again, like specifics on scheduling, but you can assume if there's a codex or something that had either been completed through testing or was imminent to testing that certainly had not come out yet when we did chapter approved, but has since come out or is about to come out, it would not have been addressed in chapter approved because how could you possibly address something that hasn't hit the, like we just finished submitting to you these codex recommendations. Now it's chapter approved. Ah, we'd like to change those recommendations we just made. Like some of those things are
to do over. I don't know. Oh, so does anybody have what's a Land Raider Crusader cost right now?
245 base.
200 base points now.
No, 244 before war gear now. Or in chapter approved, it's
200 right now. Or 200 in chapter approved. I'm sorry.
And again, the war gear that it's equipped with, like what's a twin las cannon cost now in chapter approved?
Twin las cannon, 40 points.
Wait, so you're gonna tell to drop on the point about war gear, if the twin las cannon is 50 today and it's 40 now, that's 20 points off every Land Raider just for its las cannons. And the Land Raider itself went down from, I think, 240 to 200. And so the changes capitalize on each other. There's some substantial reductions to some of the units that were just absurdly overcosted.
Yeah, I like that. And now granted, Land Raiders are still Land Raiders, but
don't let anybody touch your Land Raider. Okay. They react very badly to being touched.
They like to live on the shelf or in a foam container. They're okay with that.
You're at least not going to embarrass yourself when you take one now. That's where I'm going. I am real excited. Like I'm a huge fan of the Grandmaster and Nemesis Dread Knight.
Me too. That's one of the few models I like.
Two more guard squads to screen that Land Raider than you used to be able to.
Yeah, sure.
Not everyone plays guard, Mike.
Well, I mean, you bring up, I mean, this is a good point, though. It's like, what else can you get now that the unit that you want to take is more attractive to take? You now have freed up points to take things that you should be taking, and maybe a little bit of points to play with what you want to take. If you're not just a hardline competitive, you know, want to boil down your list to the have absolutely zero fat on it kind of deal.
Yeah, we kind of looked at it like, I don't think we were strike squads, for instance, but I think we kind of looked at strike squads and went, they're okay. What the matter, the problem is everything else they got to buy to put a strike squad on the table in the first place is so freaking expensive that you can't afford to have any of them. And I think to your point you just made, Paul, you can have a bunch more dudes than you used to be able to while still having the same surrounding infrastructure that supports them, and that's a really big deal for balancing the army.
Storm bolsters are pretty good in the game right now. I mean, am I wrong
no disagreement
that?
We have nothing else to add. We've got nothing.
I mean, I like combi bolters or custom shooters, but you know, whatever. It's, you know, tit for tat. Yeah, that's exactly.
Jerk, sorry. I don't know. PG, sure. Jerk.
My parents loved each other.
That's right. I got plenty of shredders for you.
Oh, God. Don't tell me that. poison in general. I hate poison.
Okay. So the Grey Knights, we talked about that, getting big changes. Eldar are not going to be changed as much as people want, maybe.
Yeah, that's kind of a weird one. Yeah. We definitely did not make Yanari Reapers cost less. Sorry, does anybody take them other than as Yanari?
It's just Yanari right now. That's pretty much what you see most of the time is just the Yanari ones. And
I would hope you'd see something with Yunari at some point later in the year, but I have no idea.
Oh, no, they're nerf proof, dude.
Well, yeah. Three times, right?
It is hard to nerf. You get to act as twice the unit that you are. The Eldar actually probably got more points reductions than increases, because as powerful as like Inari is, there's a lot of Eldar units that never see the tabletop.
Yeah, they never will. Until, it's going to be difficult to put them on the table when you have so much more attractive options. Instantly game-winning options. Well, that's probably a bad way to
like describe Paul
it.
Murphy.
Well, super hey... I played Dark Reapers and I love them. And this is a very difficult conversation to have. but Shining Spears,
I never played them, so.
Yeah. And things like Striking Scorpions. Striking Scorpions, 10 points apiece now.
Pretty substantial change.
Well, it is. And also just the amount of attacks that Striking Scorpions put out. I think that the induction of orcs will change the landscape of the game. And the quicker that the rest of the game can get caught up to understanding they're going to have to deal with orcs at the top tables, faster we'll see some changes in army list.
I find it amazing. When we were going through the testing process and talking about the increase in orc boy costs, there were some people who had some serious heartache about that. They were like, oh no, we can't do that. And there's been remarkably little complaining about it based on how powerful the codex actually turned out being.
As they're rolling their second bucket of dice.
Yeah. I mean, we sat there.
Way to sell the dice out.
We were still talking. I was like, is there anything? What's the best troop in the game? The 7-point orc boy. I would say the 7-point shooter boy is probably the best, because he doesn't have to assault you. He just shoots you.
He could assault you. Let's not get it wrong.
Yeah. With 3 attacks apiece, there's nothing. Like, what troop in the game that is that your army is mostly troop that will kill you? Orcs. I'm very happy with the codex. I think it came out very well. I didn't think the points were too off beyond mega, that we talked mega knobs. This is the only thing I think is the points are a little weird. But everything else seems about, because they weren't too low. But we'll see.
Jump into chaos. The warp bolt is 3 points.
Well, demons?
Yeah. No, this is for chaos space marines, the warp bolter.
Oh.
Wasn't that 9 points before?
Well, yeah, it was silly. It was like nobody ever takes that stupid thing.
Something on Demon Prince, right?
The Demon Prince for the Chaos Space Marine one was 3 points in the chapter approved, but it didn't infiltrate to demons.
I thought the warp bolter was changed last chapter approved.
It was. It was 3 points last chapter approved.
It's three points again. It's still here.
We did get them to print all of the old changes so that at least you didn't have to look at 2 chapter approved in order to play.
Okay, cool. That's good.
That's okay. Super good. I was going to ask you, I was like, please, for love of God, because we had to take 2 chapter approves. That's going to be frustrating.
Oh, yeah. Chaos is the first place where you see some key changes. Like, take a look at those combi weapons, Paul. Tell me what you see.
I'm going right now.
Tell me the points. I haven't really feel
combi it. Flamer, 8 points. Combi Melta, 15 points. Combi 7. Plasma is 11.
The combi plasma today is 15. It's now 11, you say. Combi Melta, 19 today, goes down to 15. And the combi Flamer is 11 today and goes down to 8. And that, Imperial / Chaos common weaponry, like range of weapons, has universally come a fair bit down. And I think there's a lot of different entries in the book, if you're looking at it, about all those different weapons, whether it's missile launchers or las cannons or twin las cannons or, all the combi weapons, even just the basic flamers, I think have dramatically dropped in points, like 33% reduction in flamer cost, I think.
Yeah.
So it's huge how that impacts in a very like a easy to miss way. Like there are people that will look at like the Taunar change, which holy cow, it changed a lot, and be like, wow, it's such a huge change. And they'll miss the fact that the average special weapon or combi weapon equipped marine type squad probably dropped by like 20 to 30 points each.
I think that's just as significant as a point drop to power armor marines in general as well.
Well, you're gonna see specialist weapons instead of not seeing them. That's the big thing. It's like, oh, I added a random extra specialist weapon on the squad. Now I have an answer because I can shoot something else with a specialist.
Well, those add up. I mean, let's say you're taking a unit of Chaos Terminators that can all take weird combi weapons or whatever. Once you start doing it, then you're looking at, you turn what is a modest effective unit into a gross point sink. And this is, I think, a big step in actually playing with that unit again.
This answers a lot of the concerns that people have about things like regular tactical marine squads or just your normal power armor guys in general, because your intercessor squads are down in points. They can only really target one kind of enemy effectively with a tactical squad.
Now we have Power Fist, baby.
Well, you got me there.
Wait, I didn't hear you. What's a tactical marine? I have never seen one on the tabletop.
You have to go back to RT001, Thomas.
and that's the thing is if you have a greater flexibility, like if you can pay the same points in effect for the tactical squad before and after, but the after version you have more weapons or better weapons, what are you going to do?
Can we stop talking about tactical marines? Can we stop trying to make tactical marines happen?
Did the Helldrake go down? Please, for love, tell me what happened.
Hang on.
As I've already scrolled back.
Maybe.
Oh, Helldrake, 120 hey, points base.
Yeah.
Oh
my. That's a 20 point drop, basically. And then what's the weapon on the Helldrake? Was it really two weapons?
Baleflamer?
Mm-hmm. I don't think that changed.
The Baleflamer did not. The Hades, what is it? The
Hades Auto Cannon
is 20 points now.
Yeah, that's a drop too.
Did Berserkers go down?
You stupid question.
I'm no. sure they did. I'm sure they did. I'm positive they did.
I'll tell you no. It did not go down.
No, when the
made like, chain axes cost good boy points. It's really unpleasant for everybody.
Negative 4 points a piece? Amazing. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how to read or count, so that makes it okay.
Well, I think you were asking about jumping in, still staying in the Chaos Vein, but going to the Greater Demons, like the Wrath of Khorne Bloodthirster is 240 points now.
Yeah, that's a change of 100 points.
It makes them, because right now the problem with them is that you would have them on the table. They don't kill enough to match their points. So you're like, okay. But now going at that range, you're like, okay, now I can basically like have this and more stuff. Or maybe the new flesh hounds that might are having new rules. So, you know, everything else on the table, it makes it a little better. I'm happier. I thought the Bloodthirster rule-wise was the closest one to being what it needs to be. It's just the Greater Demons are just not very, they're kind of squishy.
It tells you a lot about how unbalanced they are that when they change by 100 points and you're like, it makes them a little better.
It means you have more stuff. It's what you said before. It's like, you have more stuff on the table. So now they're not like, oh, I have a couple little whatever troops here. Now I've got, oh, we've got more stuff I have to deal with, so I don't have to just choose your Bloodthirster. I can have to choose something else.
Well, they fell victim to, you know, rules and then some type of comparison to other Greater Demons, I think. That's what it seems like to me, to where the rules of the game changed around them so much that they became just targets, just basically bullet sponges. They couldn't do what they needed them to do. And with that big point price tag, you just disqualify them before you get to your army list. Now, not so much.
And I think all the Greater Demons, a lot of demons in general, went down quite a lot in points. Because no, how many people see demon armies at all?
Just Plague Marine. Just Plague Bearers. That's it.
Lord of Change, 270 points. The Lord of Change with the Baleful Sword is 275. The Keeper of Secrets is now 165.
Mm-hmm.
Kairos. 285 points. All the great unclean ones dropped, I believe. I don't think any of them. Maybe the Bell. Did the Bell go up?
No, none of them went up. They all went down.
Yeah, so Doomsday Bell and Plague Flail is 305 points. Bell and Bioblade, 295. Then 285, 275 for the other two variants.
Did any of the Demon Princes change?
Probably. Maybe.
You mean just the base Demon Prince?
Yeah, just the base Demon Prince.
I don't see a Demon Prince change, no.
Demon Princes are pretty good. But yeah, a certain name Demon Prince may
cost. Belcor, 240 points.
There you go.
Yep. You know, and the reason I like this change so much is because not because you get more great unclean ones or whatever, is because you get to have more of the actual demons on the table, so you have a better shot at winning games.
Oh, we made the changes just mostly hoping to get more great unclean ones on the table, so call that failed.
Awesome models.
They are one of the actually all the new, any of the new resculpt demons are pretty awesome. They go together really well.
Rodigus is 285. Sorry to jump in, Thomas. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's okay.
Yeah, it's a major change to Rodigus.
No, it sounds like it's a ton of changes, and this is just going into points. I mean, we're not even looking at, you should just turn over to the big bad boy that everyone thought should go up in points. How much did the Castellan go up, or did it not go up in points?
I thought you were going to say the Lord of Skulls.
Castellan.
Hey.
So, like I mentioned, so one can assume that when you have to do feedback on a book that has to get printed and distributed globally, that there are certain other publications that you've either completed feedback on or have yet to give initial feedback on, and that have yet to also go to publication. So let's say it takes 6 months, and I'm making that up. I actually don't know, but to keep it at a high level of ethereality, let's say it just takes 6 months to do. We finished writing a book and getting feedback from the testers and finalizing a book, and then we hit the send to printer and translator button. And they got to get translated in all the different languages, and then they got to get printed, and they got to get distributed to all the warehouses, and they get ready to go to all the stores, and all the retailers, and all the online distributors, and the different like logistical supply points, procurement centers. There's all that stuff that has to happen. And so you can't just do one book at a time and wait like X number of months to have it go out and then do the next codex or rule change. So you can assume that there were some number of books that were done either before, during, or after the playtesting process affected chapter approved. And given when Knights released, you might not surprise you to see that there may not be... What changes are there to Knights, to Castellans?
The Twin Icarus autocannon, does that affect him? No.
Oh, snap.
Is that an option for Knights? I didn't know what that weapon is.
I don't know what it goes on either.
Yeah. There is
points flew close to the sun.
There are no changes to the Castellan Knights. There's only changes to the Imperial Knight war gear.
Yeah, and I just said a lot. But I'll say the Castellan is doing really well right now in the meta. It is not doing broken well anymore since the big fac after Nova. And so I don't know if I would change Castellan points if I had a say in it right now anyway, and it may be that we would not have had the ability to affect Knights due to timing regardless. So either way, you might say that the lack of change to Castellans is not a reflection of nobody caring or thinking that they're very powerful. It may be a reflection of a combination of their performance is good without being overbearing anymore, and you know, production schedules are a thing. Now, it may not have affected Knights. I actually don't, this is an honest statement, I don't know if it did affect Knights, but there's more to it than just, does it cost right? The question is, how does it perform? And it seems to be doing more. It's a great army,
Realistically, though, if people get more toys to deal with them, which is what's happening just by the sheer point changes, you're going to have more things to deal with them.
I thought we didn't want to give people cool toys.
Well,
I'm confused.
I just want the cool toys. Can no one else have cool toys? How about
I do want to talk about something that's near and dear to me, and that is...
God. Blood Angels.
You talking about Blood Angels?
What do you think I've been waiting for this whole time? Why do you think I've been so
Commander
quiet?
Commander Dante is still 175 points.
In my opinion, he still costs too much.
Gosh. I think he costs too much, too. I'm with you.
Yeah. Okay, like, that's...
It was a fight, man. I tried hard.
He was 215 before.
Now he's only 175.
Yeah.
So that's better. Like, there is no version of that is worse than what it was before.
Mephiston is 160.
Oh, he went up. He went up
a little bit. I think that's a little bit of an overreaction.
That's because, rude.
Again, well, because he just needs so much to make him work.
He was kicking shins in at LVO, and
But I mean, I don't see all of this stuff just as reaction to some list performing well. I think some of it is an adjustment, and you know, just for overall like balance or whatever. But I think Mephiston's one of the... Now, look, I'm biased, of course, but a psyker that has to power up to do things that can be countered to do well. In the instances that he does do well, we should all just be kind of sitting back and giving him the, yeah, man, go for it. You know, but let's not. Dante, 175. Sanguiner is 150.
150. That's quite a big drop for him, too.
Lamartis, 100 points.
Oh, that is... Wow. That's a big drop. He went down by 29. That's fantastic.
Yeah, he was like right on the edge of, do you want to take him if you did more Death Company and a Slam Captain stuff? And
Exactly the same as a Slam Captain. So, like, if you were tight for HQs and you had to choose between him and a Slam Captain, it was pretty much an obvious choice to go with the Slam Captain because of everything you can do with stratagems and stuff.
Now, here's one that's going to light the internet aflame, Paul. What do you see as the change to Slam Captains?
Just the captains in general?
Yeah, dude, captains would jump back in a Thunderhammer. Did they change at all? And a Storm Shield.
I'm going, hang on. Let me look
at Objection, leading the witness.
What is Captain with Jump Back? What's the point of Captain with Jump Backs?
You're making
Captain with Jump Back's 93 base.
Okay. Right, yeah.
Right now.
I'm looking at right now. What does it say now in the chapter proof? Come on, Paul.
Look, he doesn't exist.
No. Okay, so the Captain with the Jump Back didn't change. What about that war gear? He takes a Thunderhammer. Did that change?
Nope.
What about Storm Shield he's carrying?
Storm Shield on characters is 10 points.
Oh, what does it say?
15 points is in the codex.
So you're telling me Slam Captains drop 5 points?
Once you remove the ability to jump over units when they assaulted, they became exactly what they needed them to be.
And we totally meant to do that.
It's one of those rules changes that everyone's like, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me in the game. I'm like, yeah, but like as a realistic aspect, I was like, yeah, it makes the game not so dumb.
It's from the game designer's point of view, it's a fun control, and let's
we gotta control that fun.
Yeah.
I think on one of the broadcasts, I think at your event, where they saw the Slam Captain's assault from the building and be like, I can make this charge no matter what.
So Rob Crudis, who's the head rules writer for 40K, he was one of the head judges at Nova, and his reaction to some of that stuff was, well, let's just say he had a notebook.
I mean, which is what you want. I mean, he's like, hey, here's what how you interpret. Like, that's not how you play with intent sometimes. We play by just reading what you're writing. We don't know anything about your intent all the time. You know, anything else, which is that's the way the game goes. And so you have to change it back and reiterate and be like, oh, I don't want you to do this.
Absolute okay. Truth. We're barely scratching the surface. Let's take a break, a quick break. We'll come back and jump right into it. As you can see, we're kind of jumping around, and because there's just so much to cover. I mean, this is a jam packed book, 140 something pages or whatever of different things. And we'll take a short break, come back, talk more about this stuff.
Sounds great.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
We are back, so got the whole crew here. Welcome back, everybody.
Hi. Why, hello.
Hello.
I had a nice nap during that break.
15 seconds.
I ran a marathon. Fastest ever done.
It's fast.
I painted three armies. It's good.
Yes, and also finished testing Codex Squad.
Oh, way to jump the shark.
We're going to have a hobby segment on this. At the end of this, we're going to bring back finishing moves. I got a great topic after we talk about Codex Sisters of Battle.
My finishing move is wash and dry brush, by the way. Pro tip.
Don't undersell it. Sometimes it's what you got to do.
If your army's painted on the table, that makes me feel so much better when I get my butt kicked by it. So it's okay.
So the Adeptus Auritas. Wow. Yeah, this
was that Spanish?
It wasn't. It was not.
Listen, it is a daily adventure in the FTN network of how Paul's going to pronounce things. It's a great adventure.
I just said, wow, I was impressed. That's no negative.
And here, we'll continue to refer to them as the Sisters of Battle, with they get 2 pages of stratagems. So you get like a good insight into what things could possibly end up being. No, we don't see any of the new models yet, but we know they're coming. We've seen in the studio previews little snippets of the models being designed, but they are not in this book or pictures of the book past St. Celestine.
And her friends, right?
Right, yep.
You mean they're not redesigning that model?
Friends? Would we say friends? I feel like conscripted casualties, but
conscripted she brings casualties. Them back. She's the most considerate lord in the whole Warhammer mythos here. She's the only one that brings any of her wound catchers back.
That is pretty nice.
I don't know. I feel like Nagash has some questions.
We also got that she got ruined by the recent Alpha Legion book where it turns out there's actually just infinity Celestines, and every time she fights, she usually dies and just has to get born again through a horrible process in the warp. She's basically an Imperial demon.
Yeah, she's a demon. That's pretty much in the last, like, Cadia, she's like, I'm coming from birth from the warp, and I come into the real world. You're like, oh, my lord.
And she, like, loses a little bit of herself every time it happens?
Nope, she just starts over.
Oh, that's the impression I got when I read the
Cadia one.
Birth, yeah.
She says C-Sack's like she's losing a little bit of herself, or she never really had anything else. But for all intents and purposes, like they talk about how the saint is multiple forms, so she's not always this giant angel thing. She could be, not a giant angel thing, something else. But so that's kind of what they've.
She'd come back as a mega knob.
Yeah, sometimes she's just a mega knob.
Put some lipstick on the next mega knob, like, hey,
she's like,
I don't think Celestine wears lipstick, you jerk. Just saying. So, rules.
Rules.
Okay, so the Sister Battle, they belong to certain orders, and the orders, I assume, are going to have their own rules. The Acts of Faith, they get faith points.
It's like a new command point based upon the number of sisters you have.
If your army includes any models with this ability, you start the battle with 3 faith points plus 1 additional faith point for every 10 models with this ability in your army.
Rounding down.
Yeah, rounding down. And then they can be spent to do different stuff. And there's a devotion value, and I believe you have to roll a d6 and meet the devotion value.
Yep.
Go ahead.
So, like, the old way I had before, the old faith points kind of before, right?
Well, the old faith points was you had to, there was some weird thing where you had to be, sometimes you had to roll above, sometimes you had to roll below or whatever.
Right.
This is a more uniform structure.
Think of it like warp charge with a single d6 and points to burn to go after them.
Lose the points if you fail the roll?
Yeah, you burn the point to try the roll.
There you go. Yeah, these can be spent to attempt acts of faith listed below. Each can only be attempted once per battle round, and you must spend one faith point each time you do so.
It's like almost like a stratagem squared, really.
Yep.
Well, they have stratagems too. These are bonus things. The move, the free move, that is the kind of the characteristic trick they have right now, is not the same. Doesn't exist.
It may have been a little bit too crazy, and we may have not kept it.
It was what you took them for. You took them to just do that, and I believe that. If a codex or something only has one trick, and that's the only reason you do that, then it's probably the codex should probably use a little work, because if you're only taking one thing consistently out of it, you know, maybe that's the case.
Well, that's always one thing defines what they are, which is usually what for in the beginning was the saint moving double and attacking something, then taking forever to kill, and then appearing in the middle somewhere and attacking something else, or the saint telling one of her friends with a bunch of melted guns or guns, say like, hey, you're gonna shoot twice. Cool, bro, I'll do that. So,
Broette.
It's all bra.
Hand the Emperor devotion value 4. Use this act of faith at the start of your movement phase. As successful, add 3 inches to the selected unit's move characteristic until the end of the phase.
So you're going to roll 4+. That would be
devotion value of 4. Yeah. Yeah. To make the test of faith for the unit rolling a d6, if the result is less than the acts of faith devotion value, or it is an unmodified roll of 1, the test fails and nothing happens. Otherwise, the test is successful and the acts of faith takes effect.
I would say that the easiest way to summarize faith is that it went from being like almost Yanari-esque absurdity to being buffs that are available to units on demand.
Yeah, I like that. And then once per battle round, it's got that kind of check and balance already built into it. That there is some variety here, but it looks like your opponent can at least put their mind around what you might be doing. So I like that kind of anti-feel-bad type thing there. Spirit of the Martyr. Use this act of faith at the start of your movement phase. If successful, one model in the selected unit regains D3 lost wounds, or if there are no wounded models and any model in the units have been slain, you can return one slain model to the unit with one wound remaining.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
A heel.
Aegis of the Emperor.
Or bring back that Inferno Pistol Seraphim or something crazy.
What's the armored, the mech sisters? Do they have the Axe of Faith? I guess we can get to that. The Penitence Engines or something?
I guess we'll find out as we go through.
Aegis of the Emperor, Devotion 3. Use this act of faith at the start of your opponent's psychic phase. If successful, the unit until the end of the phase, roll a d6 each time the selected unit suffers a mortal wound. On a 4+, that mortal wound is ignored.
So that's pretty good.
Smite catcher.
You smite spam army.
Divine Guidance, devotion value of 4. At the act of faith, use this act of faith at the start of your shooting phase. If successful, add 1 to hit rolls for the attacks made with this unit's ranged weapon until the end of the phase.
Yeah, Paul really does have a copy of this. Just verbatim.
The Passion, devotion value of 5. Use this act of faith at the start of your fight phase. If successful, the selected unit can be chosen to fight with twice in that phase.
You may find out that we've made Repentia viable.
So
you'd say you've repented of the previous way of playing with him.
If you can get him to the fight, and we'll see how that goes.
Ah, he made a penitence joke.
Light of the Emperor, devotion value 3. Use this act of faith at the start of the morale phase. If successful, the selected unit automatically passes a morale test that phase. That's pretty interesting, because...
So the penitent man will pass?
Brilliant reference. On the cuff. Off the cuff. On the fly.
Oh my goodness. Where I was going with that actual advice
they over named
here.
Him after the dog, Paul.
You get to do this before you elect to spend command points, right? Because when you take the test is when you choose to, when you go to nominate the unit, take the test, and then that's when you burn the command points instead of making the test.
Yeah, you basically pick a unit and say they're passing.
Or you basically get two shots in the game. That. Yeah, two units get to stay in the game.
Yep, pretty good.
So I don't mind that at all.
It certainly gives them a little bit of a unique flair.
We're still in the army special rules. So this is the Shield of Faith. Models in this unit have a 6+ invulnerable save. In addition, units this ability can attempt to deny one psychic power each enemy psychic phase in the same manner as a psyker.
Keep going.
When they do so, first select a model in the unit, measure range, visibility, etc. from the model. When making the attempt, only roll a single d6 instead of 2d6. The psychic power is resisted if the roll is greater than the result of the psychic test that manifested the power. So,
okay, I think so, that's not very good, but you should just keep that tucked in the back of your mind as we go through this, guys, and wait till we get to relics.
They got the Zealot rule. I think
foreshadowing.
Everyone knows what Zealot does, but just in case, you reroll failed hit rolls for this unit in a turn in which they made a charge move, was charged, or performed a heroic intervention. So those are the bulk rules at the beginning of the decks. Saint Celestine has the
axe
Axe of Faith and the Shield of Faith. So the Shield of Faith is the one that gives her the 6+ invulnerable save. I know she's going to have another piece of war gear or whatever, but that's just telling you that's one of her abilities, Axe of Faith, Shield of Faith. I guess if there's something that knocks out a piece of war gear, she would still have the Shield of Faith.
I will endeavor to help here by saying that Celestine's, I'm just going to point out her changes, Paul, if that helps.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. Sure.
So she lost a wound, which is probably fair. Her cost went down substantially. She still has her 4+ invul naturally, and she still has her boost to Shield of Faith abilities by +1 to units within 6 inches, just like she does today. So Sororitas units within 6 inches of Celestine, instead of a 6+ invul, they get a 5+ invul.
Woof.
But her miraculous intervention changed in a very important way. If you take a look at that, Paul, and share it with us.
The first time Celestine is reduced to 0 wounds, roll a d6. On a 2+, set her up at the end of the phase as close as possible to her previous position and more than 1 inch away from any enemy models with all lost wounds regained.
What's the huge difference there?
So she's closer to the fight.
And she isn't re-deep striking anywhere on the board anymore.
Right.
One of the biggest things about her was that she did all this damage to her. You finally put her down, and then she just pops up way on the other side of the table behind a building. That doesn't sound like that can happen anymore. She's still good. I mean, she's with the 6 wounds and a 2+ armor save, with a 4+ invulnerable save, that's what her war gear gives her, the armor of St. Catherine. 4+ invulnerable save, the ability to buff people around her, and a point reduction, still pretty darn good.
Yeah, and I don't see much to be angry about.
Her strength is the Ardent Blade, but this might be the same, but it's +4 strength, so she's swinging at strength 7, 2 damage apiece with 6 attacks. So she still hits pretty hard. This is with no buffs from anywhere else in the army.
Yep. So basically, we took away the things that were negative play experience and left everything that was awesome.
The Canoness, I think she looks the same to me. You can correct me if I'm wrong here. But the Lead the Righteous, reroll hit rolls of 1 for friendly order units while they're within 6 inches of her. So the Lord
vital for Celestine to not roll those really unfortunate 3 ones.
Challenge accepted.
Yep. Uriah Jacobus, missionary in here, and then the Battle Sister Squad. So the Battle Sister Squad have the Axe of Faith and the Shield of Faith, meaning that these are regular old troop squads with a base 6+ invulnerable save in addition to their 3+ armor save. They can get the Simulacrum, which adds 1 to their Test of Faith, which I think is pretty good because some of that stuff was, you know, you're casting, I'm going to say cast, but you're casting it on 4s most of the time. The tough one, the toughest one they had was casting on a 5, dumping that to a 4. And then a lot of stuff is getting cast on 3s.
Yep. And I don't know if it's the way they are now. The battle system, the Sororitas squad on standard will have 3 storm bolters and 2 bolt guns, and I think only 51 points for that loadout.
So the Light of the Emperor has the devotion value of 3. So getting a +1 on the Test of Faith is you're keeping that squad around on a 2+.
Oh, yeah.
That seems pretty good to me.
Yeah, it seems pretty reasonable.
Well, especially if you invest in a larger squad. Now, I mean, Mike, I think that you're right that the common loadout you'll see is a bunch of kind of MSU type builds, but one of the big negatives to taking a large toughness 3 squad is that you find yourself removing a lot of models and then suffering, basically getting a double hit to your investment and in the morale phase. I think having 2 ways to mitigate that in an army is, I like it.
Yeah, it seems very powerful.
The Gemini Superior. I don't believe they have a change at movement 12 at 3 attacks apiece, 2 wounds apiece. I think that's the same. And then the life wards, roll a d6 each time Celestine loses the wound. They can take it. The Divine Guardians, if your army is battleforged, this unit does not take up a slot in a detachment that includes Celestine.
Yeah, I feel like the big change there is that I think in the index, the Gemini Superior are part of her squad. Now they're right. Their own data sheet, just to keep things clean.
I think a question here is, can you take the Superior here in a detachment that doesn't have an elite slot?
Is there a Supcom could take them if they had Celestine, just long and short.
Repentia. Now, you promised the Repentia squad was going to be tough.
They're pretty bad. But you won't see why yet.
Okay. So they are, movement 6, 2 attacks apiece. They do have the Eviscerators, which is x2 strength. So putting them at strength 6, -2 AP, 2 damage apiece. You do have to -1 for their hit rolls, so they're hitting on a 4. They have the Act of Faith and the Shield of Faith. Now, this is not counting anybody that may be giving it Zealot, whatever. But without any buffs, that's what they are. Celestine Squad. These are the ones, this is the heavy weapon squad.
Did you skip my Mistress of Repentance?
I did. Mistress of Repentance.
Make recompense.
Okay, so this is maybe part of what you're talking about. 4 wounds on the Mistress of Repentance. The Mistress of the Penitent, if your army is battleforged, this model does not take up a detachment, or a slot in the detachment. That's pretty good. And then the Driven Onwards, you can reroll advance, charge, and hit rolls for friendly order Repentia squads, units that are within 6 inches of the model when the dice are rolled.
That seems pretty good.
That's some new phrasing there, when the dice are rolled. Is that new? I don't recall seeing it phrased quite like that way, but it's clear, and I like it.
Yeah, I don't think, I guess that's new. That's when the dice are rolled. Say it again, exactly what the rule says.
Yep, you can reroll advance, charge, and hit rolls for friendly order Repentia squad units that are within 6 inches of this model when the dice are rolled.
To keep track of your buffs. So already we got Repentia. Yeah, 2 attacks, weapon skill 3 with a power fist, basically. Strength 3. But the first thing we come across is that they reroll advance, they reroll charge, and they reroll to hit. If you take a Mistress.
I'm taking notes. And you probably would. If you have these, then it comes in the box with her, I think. Celestine squads. These are the heavy weapons.
No, they're the special weapons one. Bodyguard elites. They're like the veterans.
They can all take the special weapons. Like, they can take a bunch of, yeah. Okay, one. Well, let me just go to it. These, they have 2 attacks apiece. So a little bit rougher and more tumbly than the basic sister squad. One may replace her bolt gun with a weapon from the special weapons list. One may replace her bolt gun from the special weapon or heavy list. One who has not replaced her bolt gun with a weapon from the special weapon or heavy list may take the Simulacrum Imperialis. That's the banner that lets them add the +1. Looks like the Celestine Superior can take some something from the range weapon or melee list, and they get the Bodyguard rule. You can roll a d6 each time a friendly order character loses a wound while they're within 3 inches of this unit. On a 2+, a model from this unit intercepts that hit. Yeah, we haven't gotten to the points yet, but I bet these are not a lot of points. During turn 1 is a big thing in 40K right now.
That does not work with Celestine.
You don't think enduring? It's order character.
Right. Go take a look at what Celestine's order is.
Fake Emperor Good Guy Demon.
Oh, Adeptus Auritas.
She doesn't have an order.
Yeah. Okay. There you go.
Who's giving out the orders here?
Eventually. So that bodyguard rule won't work on Celestine because she doesn't have an order. She is her faction keywords does not have the bracket order.
She's unorderable.
You can't tell her what to do.
The preacher has the war hymns. Add 1 to the attack characteristics of Adeptus Ministorum Infantry and Astra Militarum Infantry while they're within 6 inches of the Ministorum Priest. I think the regular squads have that. Yep, Adeptus Ministorum, so Repentia squads could be added. One of their attacks with the priest nearby. I don't mind that. Or sorry, the preacher nearby with the zealot rule, which is good for them. It's not buff. Hospitaller, an apothecary type. I'm going to kind of go past some of these. Let me know if I should spend a little bit more time on some of this stuff. But I think that some of these words and names, once you see the models or the figures, you'll know exactly what they do.
Stop at Arcoflagellant.
That's where I'm going right now, is the Arcoflagellants. Berserker killing machines. So they have 2 attacks apiece, 2 wounds apiece. Their Arcoflails have +1 strength, 1 -1 AP, 1 damage apiece, but you make D3 hit rolls for each attack made by this weapon. So each one of them could be potentially making 6 attacks apiece. Yeah, and their Berserker killing machines each time, a model with this ability lose a wound on a D6 and a 5+, the model does not lose that wound, so feel no pain.
Ooh, 5+, feel no pain. That's good.
Five up's really good. Yeah.
I miss those days. You got 2 wound models throwing 6 strength, 5 AP, -1 attacks each.
And they have the zealot rule.
And they're not, no minuses to hit with their weapon, right? Their weapon they hit like normal.
No minus. Yep. And then they don't take up a slot if you include a priest, a Minotaurian priest in your army.
Which could give them an extra attack.
Which would turn into D3 attacks.
Which so turn into potentially 9 attack models. Rerolling to hit on weapon skill 3 at AP, -1 strength, 5.
What's funny is I see some orc boys sweating somewhere.
Yeah, I painted a whole bunch of them for a sister's player that I painted for.
They're literally the preference on, like, Bumble for every work boy that there is.
Oh. That's fun. Crusaders, pretty much the same. A lot of these things don't take up a slot, and it's called the Ecclesiarchy Battleclave. So if your army is Battleforged and you include a priest, then you can get some of these other things at no slot cost.
It's interesting that there's a bunch of no slot cost stuff, and with the way the detachment's set up, did it ever really matter that you did not take up a slot? So it's always kind of an odd thing. So it's interesting to see. I mean, I'll have to see the book to see if it actually really matters. Not taking up a slot being important, or you know, you wanting that. Because I mean, if they're elites and other choices, wouldn't you want them to take up slots for, like, say, a brigade or something like that?
Yeah, mixed feedback here. Agreed.
I think it's when you're trying to maximize, like, say, you can take them and they allow you to get an elite slot where you wouldn't have a detachment that has it.
Well, I mean, like,
or the amount of them anyway.
I mean, it sounds like from most Imperial armies and most Imperial stuff, they basically want command points. So taking a detachment that's not getting command points, all of the one command or anything else, is not normally what you see in it. So, you know, if there's a way for this army to fill out what is a cheap, effective brigade, then, you know, these things not taking slots all of a sudden become weird balancing factors, because now you actually have to take elites that take up a slot to make sure you can take up the brigade.
If you just don't take the priest, then they take up the slots as normal.
But the priest is so good, bro.
Look, man, I'm just reporting right now. I'm just doing the reporting.
Yeah. You got a review, yo.
Death Cult Assassins, 4 attacks apiece with Zealot, 5+ invulnerable save with the uncanny reflexes, -2 AP, 1 damage weapons. Same deal. They've got that conclave rule. The Seraphim Squad, these are the sisters that have the dual pistols, and you can put the Inferno pistols or the hand flamers on them.
Right.
I think there was a point change on the Inferno pistols, but we'll get there. The Angelic Visage.
Hold up.
Yep.
Sam Seraphim there, you were just passing across real idly, right?
I'm reading them right now.
Take a look at their angelic visage and look at the Celestine ability at the same time.
That's what I just said.
So what does that mean they're involved at?
Improve the invulnerable save this unit receives from the Shield of Faith ability by 1 to a maximum to a maximum of 3+.
So what does Celestine do?
They start with 6. Celestine gives them a +1. These guys get a +1. That's down to a 4+ invulnerable save.
Did you already say that and I missed it?
No. I just read the title.
Okay.
Yeah. You hadn't gone into it yet.
All right.
You can set these guys up in the Sky Strike, so you can deep strike them without having to pay anything for it. Which is interesting, because as we see this stuff evolve, the stuff that gets the ability to have an alternate deployment versus the stuff you have to pay to have an alternate deployment, it actually does matter in the game. These guys get the Dominion Squad. This is what I was thinking about before that had the you can take the multiple heavy weapons or special weapons.
They're the quad special weapon. They're the guard veteran equivalents, right? They get 4 specials plus the Seraphim Superior, or the Sister Superior could take a special too.
Yeah, so they have the Vanguard ability. Once both sides are deployed, but before the first player takes their turn, the unit can move as if it were the movement phase. This unit cannot end the move within 9 inches of any enemy models. If both players have units that can do this, the player who is taking the first turn moves the units first, or their units first. If all of the models embarked on a transport have this ability, then the transport can make the move instead. It's a little bit of a flamer tank action.
That's their current ability, and it is as shenanigans and awesome as it sounds.
So yeah, I like that. What's the flamer tank?
Immolator.
The immolator.
Immolator.
Yeah. you know, other than that, they're one wound, one attack apiece. The sergeant has, the Dominion Superior has two attacks. Putting those guys in the emulator is not a bad idea. The Exorcist. Now, when we get to the points, this is what, you know, makes this stuff good. But I remember, I used to live in fear of the Exorcist.
Oh, God. I remember games where my Land Raider dying to the Exorcist or shooting across the table, singing hymns of missiles.
The hymns of sixes.
I think they're hers in this case.
Yeah. Hey,
oh, ye chant of the six pumps. Oh, man. It's still heavy D6, -4 AP D6 damage. I think that's the same. It does have the Shield of Faith, which means it has an invulnerable save. So things that buff the invulnerable save would
Wait, are you saying that there's a multiple layering stacking system of buffing invulnerable saves in this beta codex? Is that what I'm hearing?
I don't know, but tell me this. What's the damage output of the Exorcist in the index?
Let me pull it up. Hold on a second.
Well, what's the missiles? What are the Exorcist missile launcher do in the index right now?
It's 48 inches, heavy D6, strength 8, -4 AP, D3 damage, and a dash for abilities.
Wow. Okay, so that's a potential double the damage. You're going from an average of 2. I mean, you're going from an average of 2 to an average of 3-4 damage.
So it's D6 now?
Yes, D6.
Well, which means for me is a 1 damage. It's okay.
It went from Power Fist to Melting Gun in terms of damage. Yeah.
12 wounds still. Toughness 8.
Yep, toughness 8.
I always forget that it's actually T8, which is since most of the Rhino chassis are not T8, this one's actually 8 because it has that extra armor.
I mean, most tanks in general are T8.
Most of them are T7. Like you've got stuff like the Lehman Russ and the Vindicator that's 8. But generally speaking, everything else is 7 or lower.
Oh, finally, we're to this Retributor squad, the one that can take the 4 heavy weapons I've been trying to put on all the other squads.
It does exist, though. You weren't crazy.
That's the best of all the game.
I kept it. I was like, I think they're Retributors, and they have a face mask.
But they're in there, Axe of Faith. They can take the banner too. Now, taking the banner with these sisters, it's again, you know, only 4 of them can take the heavy weapons. So, do you build in these casualties that potentially double hit you in the morale phase? You know, with the points, and then in the morale phase. But with the Simulacrum Imperialis, where you're passing that morale test on, you're burning a faith point. You are burning a faith point, but the more sisters you take, the more points you get for that. And then the less command points you're having to spend on keeping your models around, even if you're just doing that. And I think that's both an early and late game performer. And so I think building your list with that in mind is, I think it's not a bad place to start. And where I'm going with that is most people take men squads just to get the heavy weapons. But then if people want to target it, then you're going to be pulling your heavy weapons sooner. But the morale phase disincentivized you of taking more units in that squad. The Sisters of Battle ability lessens that detriment.
Basically, yeah, wound jockeys, people who can take damage.
Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, it depends on the point. I mean, you're like, the sisters are pretty cheap in general. So having extra wounds, especially want to do, I mean, most of the time people look at sisters as a fill-in codex to do something different with an Imperium mixture, because they do have, you know, boulders or anything else. And so far, everything we have on this beta sounds like it's no longer just a fill-in codex. It has its own flavor and design aspects. So
I think that's something that's going to be really important to provide feedback to maintain. The default, okay, how is this going to fit into my soup mentality is something that I've never really been behind. I feel like things should stand on their own 2 feet a little bit easier. And that goes for any Imperium or non-Imperium army. But you know, the idea that they're not just building a catch-all codex to throw away and just say, hey, look, we finally did it for you. They're actually making it so, okay, people want to play with this. Let's make it playable.
I like it. To the pin.
Y'all haven't even gotten to the
relics.
And the order rules and everything else.
Yeah. So Penitent Engines do not have the Axe of Faith.
But what is this Desperate for Redemption rule, Paul?
Okay. They've got 7 wounds, 4 attacks, toughness 6. The Desperate for Redemption. The unit can fight.
Wait, what? 4 attacks? Are they Adeptus Ministorum?
They are Adeptus Ministorum. Mm-hmm.
So if there's a priest nearby, how many attacks do they have?
5 attacks?
Oh, man. Such leading questions. The suspense.
Suspense is killing me.
Okay.
But, so the, carry on.
The Desperate for Redemption, the unit can fight twice in each fight phase instead of only once.
Yeah.
They also have the Berserker Killing Machine, which means they have a 5+ Feel No Pain. And Zealot.
What's the melee profile?
The Penitent Buzz Blades are strength times 2, gives them strength 10, AP neg 3, 3 damage apiece.
Ouch.
And they can take a heavy flamer. So you don't want to be charging these guys, and you don't want to be charged by these guys. 7-inch move. The reason why Axe of Faith was important, at least important to me, or why I was so excited about to see if they had it, was because that was the one that they could use to heal themselves back up. So I thought, getting a 7-wound model back would be amazing.
It would be amazing. But they do have basically they have 10 reroll to hit 3 weapon skill Thunder Hammer attacks each per 5 phase.
Without anything near them either. So they have 8 with nothing near them. With no additional point investment, they'd have 8 attacks re-rolling misses.
Thunderhammer.
Yeah. And their Penitent Buzzblades with those stats don't take a neg 1 to hit. There's nothing here that says they're not a Thunderhammer. They're not a Power Fist. They are something specific to them, and they don't care about that neg 1. They don't get it.
They give no Fs on it. They don't care.
So with the, and their 5+ Feel No Pain with a 4+, it's only a 4+ armor save, but they are T6. T6 is sometimes just enough toughness to put things needing fives to wound you.
Right.
So, you know, I don't know how survivable they really are right now without seeing them on the table. I'm willing to bet that if you had these guys on the table, then they're probably not your opponent's first target priority.
All I'm hoping is that they get a non-metal model because they are awful to build.
You can have them in up to squads of 3. And then each Penitent engine is equipped with a Penitent with Penitent Buzz Blades and 2 Heavy Flamers. So that may make them kind of pricey, but...
Yeah, it's weird. You guys changed the rules for Desperate Redemption was on the one of the index, but it was just a 4+, you get an attack again. Now it's automatic, which is, I mean, I like that because there's nothing worse than a random dice roll to see if you got to do something, and you know, just failing that just makes you feel miserable.
Oh, the Rhino and Immolator, they both get the Shield of Faith ability. So, I mean, this is stuff that's already kind of annoying to kill. And when you put an invulnerable save on it, I think
it's buffable. Yeah. Invulnerable save.
Yeah, true. Very true. Okay. So I won't spend too much time reading those rules. You can still put the Multi-Melta on the Immolator, the Twin Multi-Melta. Remember, this is one of those things you could put that squad in and get that free move on them, so you could potentially start in a double tap melter range. Reroll damage is what I mean. You know what I mean? That's old vernacular for the new ability.
For the new kids, that is. They don't understand that.
The Immolation Flamer is a 12-inch range. Assault 2d6. So things like Overwatch, you know, people want to charge it to try to surround it to close hatch you, could be a problem.
Except for that dang Slam Captain.
Well, okay, true, but if they're using that to kill an Immolator, one, number one, he's not close hatching you.
But well, maybe all his friends are.
Things like Orc Boys and Gene Stealers.
Oh, yeah.
They do not want to be running into an Assault 2d6, Strength 5, Neg 1 AP Flamer.
Oh, God, no.
I mean, automatically hits. That's where I'm going. It's like a potential to be absolutely disastrous on their turn one. So I think keep that in mind when you are, if you are designed on moving this up before the game starts, then a good way to protect that is to put flamers on there and not be attracted to the multi-meltas. Maybe.
Maybe. Depends on how much the flamers are.
All right. Okay. Well, I can just tell you right now, the Immolation Flamer is 30 points and the Twin Multi-Melta is 40 points. So cheaper.
Yeah, you'd be taking the flamer.
And I think it's a better buy. I think it's a more versatile buy.
I agree.
So the points, so Celestine, let's go just jump to her first, is 160 points. I believe we discussed that was a decrease.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's what you said. It decreased, but she's kind of looks like she's changing how she plays. So again, she's not the random missile that you see flying around the table.
You guys have the current points, Victor. So how many points is an Exorcist in the index right now?
I will tell you in a second. I gotta go all the way down to the points.
The Exorcist missile launcher in the Codex is 0. I believe it's 0 in the index. But
it's 160.
It's the extra is 160, 125 points now for doubling the potential damage output.
That's with
a buffable invul save.
So pretty dramatic reduction in cost with double the damage potential per hit.
Yeah.
For sure.
So you have a cannonist back there rerolling those ones to hit. There's no act of faith. Reroll the number of shots.
Command point.
Yeah, right. A way around it.
But I'll roll that one again. I'll guarantee it.
The battle sisters are 9 points apiece.
Same as the index.
Storm bolters 2 points, so that's the same cost. But you're getting it on some of them on cheaper models, I think. So this do not sleep on the storm bolter. I think it's going to be sometimes it's just the gravy, it just does it, makes it all right. Okay, now we're getting into the orders.
Here's where stuff gets real.
True story.
The order convictions, you get, tells you what I'm going, strength and faith. All troops can control objectives, whatever. There's the pious and the penitent. The units found in this codex listed below can be included in the Adeptus Aureus detachment without preventing other units from the detachment. There's a list of things here that allow you to take them and don't violate your order bonuses.
Basically, special units that don't have an order but still are okay to take, like Celestine.
The Valorous Heart, each time a model with this conviction loses a wound, roll a d6. On a 6, that wound is not lost. That's for every model. I mean, that's not bad when you've already got an invulnerable save. Yeah, so invulnerable save, potentially up to buffable invulnerable save, and then a fill no pain on top of that. Whatever I can see play there. Our Martyred Lady, each time a unit with this conviction from your army is destroyed, you gain 1 faith point. I don't like that as good as the 6+ fill no pain.
Yeah, it's more of a consolation prize. It may be useful, but it feels bad because you had to lose units to get it.
I could definitely see some strategies. I could see, because, we often go through some of these reviews as looking at it as a single faction, single order army, and don't often look at the potential of multi-order army. Getting a faith point from squads that you send out there to die to then fuel faith points on your other orders, there could be value there.
Yeah, it's just weird. It's again, like, it's as Mike says, doesn't feel as good when you are losing stuff to gain stuff, and you're like I don't have anything left.
This is a game where everything dies anyway. I mean, everything can die. You're at least getting something where everyone else is getting nothing. I'm playing devil's advocate for it, but I think that there's not as good as the 6+ ignore the wound, but whatever. If you can figure out a way to gain them as you're spending them, then you're going to have more of your super juice later in the game when it really matters.
Right.
So maybe that's it. The Ebon Chalice. Add 1 to the result of the test of faith for units with this conviction. So that stacks with the banner. So that's adding 2.
That's pretty big.
There's some party time there. The Argent Shroud. Each time an enemy unit is destroyed by a unit with this conviction, roll a d6. On a 4+, you gain a faith point. That's probably more fun than the Martyred Lady.
Oh, yeah. You're killing stuff. So that looks better.
The Bloody Rose. Add 1 to the strength and attacks characteristics of a model with this conviction during any turn in which it made a charge move, was charged, or performed a heroic intervention. I like that. So the Repentia.
Sounds familiar.
Do they get the order? Gotta go back. Hang on. I lost them. The Repentia get an order.
Oh, they do?
Yep. So that's...
You would have.
I mean, we're swinging... we're talking about swinging Eviscerators and re-rolling. I mean, whatever. Why not give an extra attack?
Yeah. The order of shut your mouth.
Yep. Okay. So that's the Bloody Rose. You add 1 to the strength characteristics and attacks characteristic of the model with this conviction. So you add the 1 and then doubles it. So they're up to strength 8 with their swings. That's a lot of attacks on a knight needing 4s.
Yeah.
I don't mind that. Then the Sacred Rose.
Hang on. It's needing re-rollable 4s because of the Mistress. And yeah, you're already up to 4+ attacks per Repentia on re-rollable 4s to hit with strength 8 instead of 6 for Bloody Rose.
That's not too bad at all.
Not bad at all.
Sacred Rose, a unit with this conviction can never lose more than a single model the result of any failed morale test. In addition, when a model with this conviction fires Overwatch, a 5 or 6 is required for a successful hit roll, irrespective of the firing model's ballistic skill or any modifiers. I'm glad that has a double benefit there.
Mm-hmm.
With the sister's ability to manipulate morale, like we were just talking about twice with low impact, their offensive capability, having an additional third way would have seemed a little bit over, like too much of that. When you add in the Overwatch ability, on all those squads, I was trying to give all those heavy weapons.
Giving out heavy weapons like Oprah. You get a heavy weapon. You get a heavy
now
weapon.
Now in the business. Yeah.
I thought it was going to be more like that for Storm Bolters.
So there are two pages of stratagems. Mike,
should we
clip
note?
Give me the juicy ones that we need to talk about.
Yeah, tell
all right. Them. So even though we won't talk about the ones that Games Workshop has previewed on Warhammer Community. Take a look at Extremist Trigger Ward for those Arcoflagellants.
Two command point. Use this stratagem in the fight phase when you pick an Arcoflagellant unit to fight. Until the end of the phase, replace that unit's Arcoflails ability with make 3 hit rolls for each attack made with this weapon.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the phase, roll a number of d6 equal to the number of models in that unit. For each roll of a 6, one model in that unit is slain.
So you'll remember that they had two attacks base that did d3 each, and you could put a priest next to them. So for 2 CP, a unit of 10 Arcoflagellants throws 90, reroll to hit, strength 5 AP minus 1 attacks.
That's pretty good.
It ain't bad.
No, that's chewing up. Well, because you can use it when you can fire it off when you need it.
Yep.
This is if they charge, they get to go. If there's anyone that live or whatever, you interrupt. I mean, now granted, you are hemorrhaging command points at that point when you're interrupting and then swinging, but at least you have it. Like, there are so many things in the game that can obliterate them because they're not that tough, and they don't have a super good save. So being able to, you want momentum with those guys.
I'll take a look at the Vessel of the Emperor's Will.
This is a 3 command point stratagem. Use this stratagem after a successful test of faith roll is made by the Adeptus Sororitas. Soritas.
Say sorority.
Adeptus Soritas. Character from your army. The act of faith used on the character affects all friendly Adeptus Soritas units within 6 inches of the character. This does not cost any additional faith points, and no additional tests of faith are required.
So you remember that they have a +1 to hit act of faith.
Yes.
So you pass that +1 to hit act of faith on a character, and then all of your sisters, including exorcists and everything else, all of a sudden are hitting on 2s.
That's pretty
re-rolling
good.
Rerolling 1s for the same model that's doing the aura.
That's a force multiplier, essentially. It's a hefty investment, but
it's intense.
What are 3 exorcists? Was that 375 points?
And all of a sudden they turn from 3 ups to hit reroll 1s to 2 up rerolling 1s to hit, as well as if you get a whole bunch of Storm Bolter, which leads us to the next one you should take a look at,
I want to talk about that exorcist a little bit, because still, that they are toughness 8, so even if you go second, your opponent is probably going to have a really, really hard time wounding them because of the invulnerable save, the high toughness, and whatever else shenanigans you do. Or if you move them and have to fire them, then you're shooting on 3s still.
Mm-hmm.
Move them out.
Bingo. Now take a look at Blessed Bolts for the other benefit from that same stratagem we just talked about.
Use this stratagem before shooting with an Adeptus Sororitas infantry unit from your army in the shooting phase until the end of the phase. Change the AP characteristic of the Storm Bolters. Yeah. that models in that unit are armed with to -2, and their damage characteristic to 2.
Ouch.
I was kidding originally about putting Storm Bolters everywhere.
You take one of those Dominion squads?
I wasn't.
It is 60 points to get 5 Dominions that fire 20 Storm Bolter shots at close range.
It's 1 command point to do that.
And that 20 shot unit turns into 20 AP minus 2 D2 shots.
Ugh. That's a lot of damage.
I gotta let that sink in for a second. That's obnoxious. I mean, you think of bully units, and I know a lot of stuff has invulnerable saves, but you might see a Wraith Knight now with some point changes and stuff come out, and being able to put out all those shots with all that damage, and sometimes you just need to peel off a couple of wounds off a knight to drop it down a category, or to finish it off. Like this one command point is money in the bank if you took Storm Bolters to begin with.
Hell yeah.
Well, why wouldn't you? They're 2 points apiece.
Exactly. Last comment with the Sisters Cutting is Storm Bolters, Flamers, and Meltons, right?
And Exorcist Missile Launchers.
And wonderful ladies.
So there's some other good ones here, but for the sake of time, I would say, those cover the most important ones to take a quick look at. There are some very cool ones like Purity of Faith that give a unit a 4-up invul against psychic power effects, like it's the Black Templar psychic power shutdown, and they have things like that. But I would say if you're trying to keep it efficient for the rest of this call, you've hit the big ones.
Then we get into, there are, again, like you said, more stratagems. Then we get into warlord traits.
Okay,
we've got a little bit of time because my phone will be dead in a little bit.
So here's the big one. It's gonna be the one that most people take a look at. Indomitable Belief.
The invulnerable save for friendly order units received from the Shield of Faith abilities improved to 5+. while they are within 6 inches of the warlord.
So you'll notice that Celestine and the Seraphim both improve their shield of faith by +1. They don't change it. So this one is your warlord gives units nearby +1, changes their shield of faith.
Is improved to 5. A 5+. Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then if they happen to be Seraphim, they get another +1. And if Celestine happens to be nearby, they get another +1. So this is how you do that. My exorcists have, and my regular sisters all have 4 up invuls, and my Seraphim all have 3 up invuls, is the combination of Celestine and this warlord trait.
And we talked, that's not a ton of points to make yourself a little castle in the first part of the game.
Yep.
Well, pretty much the only thing, right, they can get through that is mortal wounds. Not a lot of people can dish out a ton of mortal wounds. Like, you're always, that just the fact that you're always going to get a save, and it's not just a save, it's a good save. Like, all of my opponents have a very good 4+ invulnerable save record.
You help them with that.
I may not kill a unit, kill an enemy.
So, the main characters have their own warlord trait, so you can't make Celestine your warlord if you want to use the Indomitable Belief. She
Correct.
Has the Beacon of Faith warlord right. trait. So just keep that in mind as you're making your list. You have to have, but I think you want the Canoness because she's letting you reroll once.
And let's combine that with taking a look at 2 relics.
All right. Well, yeah. Where are we going?
Let's get the relics, and then I probably have to
walk. We'll wrap it up with the relics.
It'll be perfect because that's when we'll be done. How about that Book of St. Lucius?
I've been wanting to hear about the relics. Like,
okay. So the Book of St. Lucius. Increase the range of the bear's aura abilities by 3. All canonists with the 9-inch reroll
ones. 9-inch reroll ones and 9-inch 5-up invul.
Seems pretty good.
And how about that brazier right. of eternal flame?
So roll 2d6 instead of d6 for the deny the witch test taken by the friendly order units using the shield of faith ability while they're within 6 inches of the bear. So remember, you pick a model to do it and then roll a single d6. And this is
exactly.
rolling 2d6.
So we heard early on that they could deny all the sisters' units, all the sororitas units could deny the witch on a d6 roll, which is almost irrelevant until you get to this one, where just by having a relic on someone within 6, any sororitas unit within 6 of it gets a full up deny the witch, not a half.
I look at this. So the command points that I know I'm going to be saving on on at least one morale test just netted me 2 free relics if I wanted them, in addition to the 1 free relic I get.
The other relics are all pretty cool, but you know, time is short. And those are I think you're going to see those in every sister's list.
Yeah.
You're going to see a 5-up invul canonist with a 9-inch 5-up invul aura and reroll 1 aura. And you're going to see another model that's probably more aggressive that has an aura that gives all the sororitas units nearby a 2d6 full up regular, like a psych or deny the witch each. And that is pretty powerful.
Yeah, it seems good.
We will, I know, again, batteries on phones and whatnot are dwindling. We can pause the chapter approved right here, but we got to come back and do this again. I want to have a couple of shows in between our next regularly scheduled show. I mean, hopefully we have some campaign stuff to talk about. And we got 2 big chunks out of this chapter approved, but there's so many nuanced things with the point changes and how it's going to affect what we see on the table that there's still a ton more to cover.
I'm happy to make time for you, Paul.
I appreciate that. Well, Thomas, I know you have to go. Mike, if you want to hang out, I'm going to do one more segment we call the finishing move segment, but it's up to you. I know it's going on midnight here on the East Coast.
Oh, it's 11 minutes past, but you know what? Finishing move sounds like the end.
All right. Well, Thomas, thanks for joining us. We'll have you on again real soon.
No
Everybody
problem.
Else, hold tight. We're going to come back right after this next break.
See you, Thomas, at LVO.
We're sponsored by Firmaterra. With their study, lightweight and portable tables, you can make war anywhere. Please visit them at www.firmaterra.com.
Everybody, we are back, bringing back, this is an official finishing move segment. Mike, since you're kind of new here, do a quick hobby tip for people that either want to spend 5 or 10 more minutes just to make their model look a little bit better, or people that are just painting towards like painting rubric points at tournaments, and you want something that's going to stand out and a little bit cooler for the judges.
Yeah, that's a good one. I can actually, since I haven't done this before, so I have, they're not the airbrush, you know, provider we use at Nova, but just as an individual, I have the Minotaur like mega paint set from, I think it's Badger, and acquire an airbrush paint set as a general rule, but the tip I want to give is use airbrush paints with a brush if it makes sense to do so. And they're by nature very watered down brush paints. So even though you're using them through an airbrush normally, part of what makes them good for an airbrush is that they're super watered down so they don't clog up your airbrush. And when it comes to the Minotaur, they've got the ghost tints, which are glossy by nature and so make for a wonderful finish to make slimy bits and also power weapon bits automatically look great just by pinning the color on, like the plasma fluid. Any airbrush paint is so watered down that it almost works like a wash, but with far more intense pigment than most washes.
Mm-hmm.
And so the pro tip I give is give a shot at, instead of just using your airbrush paints that you've acquired, whether you have one or two or a whole set in your airbrush, try using it situationally with your brush and that's see what that does.
If you can find a paint, an airbrush paint that also brushes well, that's the paint, that's the color you need to stock and use.
Don't even need to water it down.
Yeah, it's really good. What I want to talk about is I've been building an orc army. You know, there's lots of different things you can do with an orc army. There's you could put in checks, glyphs, all kind of weathering stuff or whatever. But I just built a big mech on a bike out of the index. Sometimes I struggle with like giving people advice to take things out of the index. But when you're playing in a tournament, you're going to see it until you can't see it anymore. And so go for it. But when I built this big mech, he's got all these globes and power cables and stuff all over him and little things that should glow that you might want to make look different than, say, a plasma thing or whatever. And so I look at all the tips and all the stuff in the White Dwarfs, and I look at all the tutorials, and I try to find things that work for me, because I don't have a lot of like natural talent. I have to look and I have to try to replicate some cool tutorial or an easy to follow step or whatever. The tip for the globes is going to use some washes in a technique called overbrushing. Overbrushing is different than dry brushing. Chris and Mike, are you familiar with this?
Yeah, we've talked about it before.
Yeah, the overbrushing is when you have, where dry brushing is you get paint on the brush and you wipe 90% of it off, and then you try to just get a little bit of paint on the top edges of whatever it is you're doing. That's a dry brush. And overbrush is you have maybe 50% on the paint, 75% of the paint knocked off, and you're wanting to get more coverage over the surface of the model. With this, the tip for the globe, paint the globe a single color. It could be a lighter color or whatever, some kind of base color. When you go back in with the wash, only wash the bottom part of it, the darker. You want to make the bottom darker, but still that kind of translucent color over your base color. So I'd base it, in this case, I'm probably going to base it like a Celestra gray color. I find that to be a good base color that holds washes really well. You can build it up to almost whatever color you need, and it still keeps a little bit of depth to it. I'm going to use a Gilliman blue wash on the bottom 30% of the orb coming out from where it emanates off the stalk, and then go back in with an overbrush of a little bit lighter blue. This could be like the, it's not the enchanted blue. What's the new color for enchanted blue?
There's a whole bunch of different blues
Calidor
out there.
Calidor Sky. There you go. That's what it is.
There's
sorry. Had when enchanted blue was going off the shelves, I bought like 6 pots of it because that's the color of the Ultramarines army from my buddy that I made. But now I've used them all and now gone with Calidor Sky. Overbrush with Calidor Sky. And what that lets you do, if you don't have the finer, like the detail in your muscle memory to kind of go back and knock back some of that wash to get that subtle blend, when you start doing the overbrush, it helps you blend into that wash color a little bit more naturally. And then you can go back and overbrush a little bit more towards the very top with a lighter color. This could be like a Lothrim blue or any of those kind of real brighter blue colors. Because what I find, sometimes I get a little too heavy-handed when I'm trying to go back in. And if I'm trying to paint a gem effect on something that's a sphere, I get too heavy-handed with it. It doesn't work like I want. I think this overbrush is going to give me that glow effect that I'm looking for, without making it look like, I drew on too much. It's going to give me more natural, organic effect. That's what I'm doing, and that's what I want to pass on to folks, because the Big Mech has about 4 of those knobs on them, those glowy orbs, and I wanted to pass along how I plan on doing it.
Big Mech has 4 of those knobs on them. There's a couple different ways you could hear that and get ideas.
But that's it.
Piling on him.
I want to pass it. I'm going to be doing it. You can follow me on Twitter and see the progress, where I post all my work in progress stuff at Warmaster_TPM. A lot of pics there of things that I'm building all the Ludas. This orc army is going to be a process.
The paint master, not the Paul Murphy.
Mike, Chris, thanks for joining me tonight. Is there anything else y'all would like to cover before we get out of here?
Nah, just really nice to be on the show with you, man.
Man, it's awesome having you. We're actually going to be doing some segments, The Road to the LVO, both relevant to you guys. We'll transition that to The Road to Nova after that.
10th anniversary. Yeah, all for charity.
Yeah,
pretty exciting.
Man. Yeah, I mean, tournament prep is something that's a different experience for everybody. And I think that folks hearing how long it takes and some of the steps along the way will make it a little bit more accessible and attainable to folks that may have not come out to it yet. And the 10th anniversary sounds like it's going to be something pretty big.
Oh, man. We've got full live action Kill Team games with the Games Workshop studio versus the Nova staff. And that's the least of the cool stuff we're going to do.
Well, you guys have a good rest of y'all's night. And look for, hopefully, I'm not over promising here, but look for content. We're going to have hopefully at least one or two more shows before we get to our regularly scheduled show for next week.
If I got time, it's for you, Paul.
Awesome, man. Y'all have a good night.
Adios.
Cheers.
In the reflexes.